Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, good evening and welcome to Breaking the Silence. And here we are in the most beautiful city in the world. I just love being part of Houston. The sun has just gone down, and with the time change, it's just really beautiful. The sun sets right back in here every evening now, and I just love it at this time. Right across the street, George Strait has just started a concert. I think he's about an hour into it at the Houston Rodeo, and he's ending the about 22 days of Houston Rodeo. The extravaganza that we have here in Houston is huge, and they have all the best stars in the country that come and sing and entertain. But George Strait's singing right now to the cowboys and the cowgirls over there. And you ought to come down sometime and visit Houston, because I guarantee you will not leave disappointed. And I promise you, you're going to find the best food in the world. And it's just an honor to be part of this community and this city. And I work right across the way here at the Texas Medical Center at Baylor College of Medicine. Tonight, we have an awesome, awesome program. And it's a program that we have never, I don't believe, in the couple of years we've done this show, we've ever talked about. So I'm really interested in what the subject of tonight's going to be. And I really want to drill deep as much as we can into our special guest tonight. If you want to get involved in the conversation, there's two ways to be able to do it. You can call right in to the great people of BBS Radio at 888-627-6008. Or my son Curtis on the other side of the world is running the Shattered by the Darkness Facebook page. And you can get right there. Yeah, he's already commented with people. So you can get on there and comment through there if you have a question, if you don't want to be heard live on the radio around the world. Next week, I'm not going to be able to pronounce this name, but I'm going to give it a shot. Next week, we have a great guest. The books are absolutely phenomenal. Anne Papayoti. I'll get corrected on that. P-A-P-A-Y-O-T-I, Papayoti, will be here next week. And she has a brand new book out called The Gift of Shift, Discovering the Key Within to Unlock Your Best Life. And she has all kinds of great information that she's going to share. And she runs Skyview Coaching through the storms of life. And that has me intrigued, because we always talk about storms and trauma and hurt and pain. And how do you get through those times? That's going to be next Sunday night, live at 8 p.m. Join us, and make sure you tell your friends about it, too. But before we get to our guest tonight, I just want to just share with you just something real quick. I think this is really good wisdom. So you may want to jot these down, but just remember them as we go into a new week. Some people have just experienced spring break. I don't know what spring break is all about, but some people get to enjoy that. But as we go into a new week, I just want to remind you to make a decision to laugh every chance you can, and cry when you need to. I think that's so important. Sometimes even us men think that's wrong. But when you need to cry, it's okay. Go ahead and cry. Make sure you're always focusing on your priorities. Always make decisions and not excuses. Sometimes we work harder on the excuses than we do of making a decision and getting our goals done that we really want and our dreams accomplished. And always, 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 no matter what's going on, stay true to who you are. Stay true to your values. And never forget probably one of the most important things in life, your integrity. And keep those values and keep that as a priority. Just a few little tidbits, great words of wisdom to share and put in the back of the mind. Sometimes we forget about that. Sometimes we'll go through the whole day without a belly laugh, without remembering what it is to smile and enjoy what we have been given. Now tonight, I consider a friend. I met this man in Atlanta, Georgia, I believe. We'll probably talk about that a little bit. And then just a few weeks ago, he was here downtown at the Hotel Americas or something downtown at a conference that I was at. And Adam Lanningham is the author. Listen to this book because you're going to want to buy this on Amazon. Gifted Children and How Trauma Impacts Them. And another book called Thinkology 2.2. And he has over 20 years experience in the field of education. And he is the manager of Gifted and Advanced Academics for a large, diverse school district in Phoenix area. I love Phoenix. Awesome, beautiful part of the country, providing a wide range of services to over 5,000 gifted identified students. He's an international speaker. I want to be able to use that. I can't yet because I'm not an international speaker. I guess I've done it virtually, but be an international speaker and a consultant. And he is the owner of Bright Child Books. So I want to welcome tonight to the program, Adam Lanningham. Adam, are you there? Can you hear me?
I'm here. Thank you for that introduction.
Hop on in. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Nice. And you're located right now in the Phoenix area?
I'm in Phoenix, yeah, North Phoenix.
Okay, is that close to Scottsdale? I've been there, but...
Scottsdale's a little east, but yep, not too far.
Fantastic. Well, tell us a little bit about you. I know I met you through your book, the Bright Child Books. You do that for what, conventions around the country or certain conventions? Or how many a year do you do that for?
I started it about 3 years ago, and kind of my side gig project, just because, you know, I have too many ideas and I can't stop myself sometimes. So I set up this book company and I write books and I go around to just different conferences. It's been a little odd with the, you know, COVID and everything going on. So I probably get around maybe like 6-7 times a year.
You know, I remember looking on your business card, you pride yourself in offering at your book tables the different types of books that other people may not. What do you mean by that? Is that something that you really specifically look for, the ones that you offer to the people that's at the conferences?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, my world is in the gifted bubble and, you know, working with gifted students and engaging them and supporting those teachers and parents. Because a lot of people don't really understand what gifted is. And I kind of go around and look and talk to people at conferences, kind of like where we met, and find books and interesting things that can help this teachers work with the kids in the classroom, help parents get to better understand their kids. So it's kind of the education and then that kind of creative piece.
Yeah. Now, if a parent tonight has a gifted child, and we'll talk about, you know, what gifted means, and how that is in them and what that means tonight. But that book, Gifted Children and How Trauma Impacts, is an awesome book. How can they get that, and the best way to get that before we chase a rabbit and we don't get around to it? Sure. What's the best way to get a hold of that book, put their hands on it?
We do have it on Amazon. My publisher would love you to buy it off Amazon. But if you go to my website, brightchildbooks.com, that would be through me. And it's just one word, brightchildbooks.com. And that has my books that I've written. The latest two are digital books. They're meant for teachers to use in the classroom.
Oh.
And then my original one, I'm also working on a couple other ones because I have interests and things come up and people are like, do you have a book on this? I need this. Well, that triggers me into, can I put one together? What can I do? So.
That's wonderful because we have a lot of teachers that's listening to us and that go into our archives. And hopefully They will put their hands on this and these digital books. The best way to get that is through the brightchildbooks.com.
Yes, those are only through that one.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, and I've done those with some of my teachers. Yeah.
Fantastic. And you're involved in Phoenix in a school or district that has 5,000 gifted students. What's that all about?
Yes. So I'm in Deer Valley School District, and we're the largest district in the North Valley. We just built another school, 43 schools. Right now, I am putting together our first gifted preschool that will open next year, and we go all the way through 12th grade.
Wow. Okay. Let's jump into the creek here. Let's don't tippy toe. Let's just jump in. What do you mean by gifted? What is giftedness?
It depends who you talk to. It's really interesting as I travel around and talk to different gifted organizations. I'm on my state organization as well as some national ones. And adults tend to, it's always a debate. Officially, it kind of comes down to each state. They do different laws designating what they feel giftedness is. And then schools work around that. But kind of the overview that I've put together is a person, child or adult, who in a specific area, we tend to think academics, but you could be gifted at all kinds of things. Within this area, you are able to process and piece things together and excel far above your peers. So that could be in math. If we find kids who are gifted in math, they just soak up that math so quick and can move so quickly through the process. You know, they end up grade levels above if they're not held back. We have gifted writers. You could even look at sports and things. I mean, you look at Michael Jordan or something like that. I mean, he worked really hard and trained, but there was something there that put him above the rest. So giftedness, it's interesting. So like when I talk to parents a lot is like, well, my child's gifted. What do I do? What does this mean? Well, it can mean a lot because kids are very different. But whatever area they've identified a child in, it just shows they have so much more potential to learn and make those connections than a typical child would be able to.
What kind of challenges does not only the child, so it's kind of a two-parter here, not only the child deals with if they're gifted, but the challenges that the parent deals with if they recognize, hey, wait, you know, every parent thinks their child is probably gifted in certain areas, but I mean, but truly gifted, what challenges does the parents also have to go through to be able to get this child to develop and enhance and take this to the fullest level possible?
It's interesting. We have to kind of start with understanding what giftedness is because there's so many misnomers to it. Does that mean as gifted that if I am gifted, I'm supposed to get A's in every subject area? No. Does that mean my child should be? Does that mean the term giftedness comes with so many different perceived almost stereotypes that we can get gifted people in a room and have that debate. So as a parent, it's really kind of understanding, all right, gifted doesn't mean my child needs to skip two grade levels in school. Doesn't mean my child is going to get into Harvard. It just means in whatever area they have this potential. And as a parent, you want to nurture that potential. And so many kids, you know, parents get, oh, my child's gifted. Yes, but giftedness is in so many different areas. They could be just gifted in math. And maybe they're dyslexic. That's something we call twice exceptional, where the kid may have a learning disability. That exists. And a lot of times we don't find their giftedness because we're working on the area that they're struggling in. So giftedness is pulling that potential and then kind of working through that. What I've noticed is kids who are gifted need that kind of challenge, not necessarily more worksheets or, you know, pass some AP course, but they need to engage in it, look at things from different areas. They need to experience it, maybe build projects with it, but they're going to move quickly. They're going to make those connections and they're going to be insatiable in that area and what they want to learn. Unless we do something to slow them down and hold them back, which does happen if we find kids who aren't identified or they're just in this old mindset of that just means kids get more.
Is there any kind of stigmas that runs with this term if they're tagged gifted in school that some kids don't want that? Or is there any type of stigmas that the parents and kids have to go and hurdle over?
Absolutely. So we have the kids who, you know, parents want them to be gifted and they take them to have them tested and they get into those programs. And that's good. But then we also have kids who maybe are in those programs, and depending on the culture of their school or the pressure that's put on them from their parents, they want out. So it's interesting, in my school district, when I got there, and to be honest, many, if not most school districts don't really do anything specifically for the gifted learner at high school level, unless it's an acceleration or a higher level of rigor, which AP honors courses are great for, but they don't really let kids slow down and really go in depth on something that they're having an interest in because you're trying to get through the curriculum. A lot of kids ended up wanting to go out of the gifted programs when they got to high school, just because of the different kind of stigmas or what was going on at their location. Because a lot of the times the kids could be seen as that, you know, Harry Potter weirdo kind of kid. And some of these kids who are truly gifted, what's going on in their brain that we're finding is they're developing asynchronously.
So okay, what's that mean? I don't even know what that, help me on that one.
Asynchronous development, we're learning that the gifted brain is developing in different regions at different rates from typical peers. And one thing that has kind of stood out, and I think maybe leads to a little bit of stigma when we group all of these kids together, is the frontal lobe, so the front of your brain, can have quite a delay in a gifted child. So a typical fifth grader, where we would expect to be able to organize their backpack and do these kinds of things, a gifted child, many times, their frontal lobe is a year, two, maybe 3 years delayed. And that's your logic, reasoning, organization part that they may lag in. So sometimes you'll see gifted kids come to school, they have two different socks on, two different shoes. The backpack is totally disorganized. Not unusual at all. Somehow it starts to click with them as they get older. But yeah, these kids can stand out. And it's just because their brain is working very differently in how it's, you know, growing.
You know, I have an uncle. Had an uncle that was considered a genius. And every time we was with him, we always made the same comment as a family. It's not like we didn't do it in front of me, because we did it right in front of him. Probably hurt his feelings. But he was so smart, he couldn't tie his shoes. And is that kind of what you're saying, that they have so much going on in that gifted area that the logical, normal things that everybody takes for granted, they lack on sometimes?
Absolutely. I kind of joke that there's always so much room up there. If this kiddo is able to put all these pieces together and understand advanced levels of math, there's only so much room for what can go on up there. And they're focusing on those. That's what they enjoy. And again, that part of their brain is forming faster than typical age peers.
Is there something that if I break it down in layman's terms, because you're the pro on this and I'm just somebody that just, you know, works across the street. For instance, if they're excelling in a math in high school and algebra bores them, they got this down so pat, and algebra was a challenge for me. But there's just people that went through this, like, and so they put them in calculus. Well, they didn't even teach calculus, but they put them in a calculus course. And they excel at that. And it just, they give them that extra challenge to be able to keep the wheels turning. And so they're not bored with this talent that they have and this extra gift.
Absolutely. And that's, I mean, I'll come back and probably touch on this a few times. But if you can imagine being a child in school and you already know what the teacher's talking about.
Wow.
As a child, you're going to be bored out of your mind. You might even become a behavior problem as you look for ways to entertain yourself, or you're just not paying attention. And that's part of the problem. If we don't identify these kiddos who have this potential, we're leaving them behind. And a lot of what I hear is like, oh, gifted kids, they'll be fine. Well, no. One, every child deserves to come to school each day and get a full day's worth of learning. Whatever background they're coming from, whatever level they're at, they deserve to go to school and learn. So to say, oh, well, the kid, he already knows it already, or she already knows it, she can go read a book, she can go tutor another student, which that's awful if that you now become the second teacher when things just come quickly to you and now you have to help a child who is struggling in it. It's just really heartbreaking to see these kids. What happens to them year after year after year of do the packet? Let's read this book you read two grade levels below before. We see kids who, I was going to kind of get to this later, but studies are starting to come out as we look at gifted children. They're more likely to drop out of high school than typical.
I was going to mention that, and I want to hit that on the other side of this first break. Do sometimes the gifted children get overlooked, pushed aside, and even put in a special category that's not gifted? It's more like, hey, wait, is there some type of support that they need from the school system, from parents, and from people like you to be able to make them and allow them to excel at the rate that their brain is functioning? We're going to talk about that, drill a little bit deeper on that on the other side of this first break. 888-627-6008. I'm having an awesome time with Adam tonight, learning all kinds of new stuff. If you have a question, feel free to call in or jump on Facebook. We'll be right back after this first commercial break. Hang with us. Finally coming very soon will be the release of my second book in the three-part trilogy, Overcoming the Darkness, The Roadmap to Hope. Now, this book will be an in-depth look at the many different facets and emotions that a person goes through when they're experiencing anxiety and trauma in their life, and they're simply searching for hope. And an exciting addition to this book will be a companion journal guide that will come along with it. Also, there's going to be something that I'm very excited about, the youth version of this book called When Dark Clouds Come, The Roadmap to Hope. And it's going to be an excellent tool and guide for teenagers dealing with stress in their lives. So stay tuned for the release date coming very, very soon for these exciting new resources. Now back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams on the BBS Radio Network. All right. Welcome back. And hey, I tell you what, my phone is going, the texts are coming in pretty quick, Adam. So you're hitting some parents that are saying, hey, wait, I need to know more about this. So this is good. As you're talking about gifted children, do sometimes we overlook them? And you said that possibly, let's go a little bit deeper, that they could even be considered a problem child or a bully or somebody that's disinterested because they're bored with what's happening in class. What kind of support do these gifted children need in life?
Well, looking at school system, we need kind of a few things. One, we need teachers who are trained to understand these types of learners. I went through my education and we spent one day talking about gifted in one of my classes.
Interesting.
We need teachers to know that these kids exist and some basic strategies to help them. We need to have these kids able to be with their typical peers. So how you want to structure classes and whatnot, we always, in my district, it's a mandate, gifted kids will be grouped together. They need to have someone else in their class that kind of gets it. I talked a little bit about the asynchronous development. If you're the only kid in the room that you're seeing things differently, you're behaving differently, that's not good.
Yeah.
So the more we can group these kids together, have them with a teacher who understands them, and then we can start building programs and different pull-out services and things. That's kind of the mix that what I've noticed is a lot of elementary schools tend to get right. Again, every state's a little different with giftedness and how it's funded, if it's even noted. And then when I got this position, I really looked at the high school because I'm like, what are these kids coming up to? Because it hadn't changed much since I had been there. And I started working with parents and teachers and bringing the awareness to our high school campuses that, hey, this is what your students are telling me. That is what's going on. So it kind of comes back. I have a little story of what kind of got me into gifted.
Yeah,
in the first place.
Yeah,
I was teaching middle school at a fairly well-off area. I was teaching 7th and 8th grade social studies in ELA. And we had a gifted program. It stopped at 6th grade. So these kids would be pulled out and they were what you would imagine gifted, what you would dream it to be. Well-behaved, you know, they did everything right. They're smart. They would come out into my classes and they would mix with everybody else. And then we did start doing some advanced coursework and things too. But what was interesting is there were kids that I could tell were super smart. And they weren't coming out of that gifted program. And it just, my brain, I'm always questioning, like, well, why is this? What's going on? And in my class, I was teaching social studies, so it was lots of interactive things, and we really got into those discussions, and I tend to be fairly humorous and sarcastic, and these particularly boys would latch on to that, and they would get it, and they would engage in these discussions, and I'm like, where is this coming from? They wouldn't do homework. They were awful for the substitute teachers. They weren't great for all the teachers in general. They were very much checked out. And that just always stuck with me. And when my district started offering gifted training coursework for free, I'm like, sure, I'm interested. Let me go see. And that's where it clicked that these kids were not identified at a young age. They never really had their needs met. You know, they were getting bored. They started the behavior problems, even at a younger age. And it just, for the lack of knowledge and understanding, let's identify all of these kids, try to get them tested, get them in early, not just pick our stereotypical ones and test them. We need to be more open. And now I train my teachers, you know, if you have a kid who is an English language learner and exits out quickly, test that kiddo for gifted. If you have a child who's a behavior problem, test that child. Even kids who are identified as special ed, we know that some of them do have giftedness in there that we don't catch. Test those kids. It's a very much, we're very proactive trying to find them. But it took, you know, who knows what's going on at every school and every district out there that for us, this became a priority. But just seeing these kids who year after year did not have their needs met, no wonder they're more likely to drop out of high school and things like that.
Were you considered gifted?
Me, no. I've been told as an adult, yes. As a child, no.
Okay. I didn't know if that was one of the reasons you leaned into it, but you just saw the need.
I saw it. Like I told you, I saw these kids who got my dark English humor and it would engage with these discussions. And it always sat at the back of my head. And then I went to these classes and I'm like, aha, we just didn't identify them.
Do you think the education of the teachers has improved since you had gone through? Because you said you had maybe 1 or 2 days on it in your classes. Yeah. Are people, is our country focusing any more on it than what they did a generation ago?
I would like to say yes. I really don't think so. It doesn't seem to come up as a priority. I mean, you have some states talking about getting rid of accelerated math programs. My state, even, they're talking about getting rid of AP programs, which AP is not gifted, but it's good for a lot of children who are gifted and want that rigorous coursework. So every state's very different, and it's kind of all over.
What about other countries? You see in other countries that excel in this, pull out those children that have that extra gift in them and boy, really nurture them. Do you know anything about other cultures?
Well, absolutely. I mean, some cultures, they even do the tests and then the kids go on to different tracks and things. But thinking of us as a country in a very, you know, globalized society and competing, the other countries are definitely looking for those kids who can, you know, get this knowledge, move quickly. And I mean, these are going to be the kids. So I kind of say within the gifted realm, we still have a spectrum. So let's say we take all the gifted kids, we're going to have a mix of not only abilities, but the way they learn. Some of these gifted kids are the true, you know, Doogie Howsers, or they're going to be, you know, the Elon Musks of creating, you know, discovering, finding all kinds of things and, you know, saving lives. Then you have some who are just, you know, the next CEO. They're dotting their I's, they're crossing their T's, they're in those AP advanced courses, and they're ready to go lead a company. So even within gifted, we kind of have this, I call it the bell curve of gifted. Mm-hmm. Because it's you've got the kid who's, I call it the hot mess, who can't organize their backpack, but oh my gosh, what they're able to come up with as a third grader and piece things together and put together a project out of nowhere. It's amazing. And if we're not aware of these kids, it's not only hurting them, but as a country, how are we going to stay competitive if so many of these kids are dropping through the cracks?
Yeah. Do you believe that these children are wired in such a way from the beginning that is the way that they're literally designed by their creator, whatever your beliefs are, Alan, whoever's listening, but that they have that extra wiring that is supposed to be nurtured? It is their gift to the world. And sometimes we just flat step on it.
That's very interesting question, and that comes up, and it's debatable. We call it the nature or nurture. Mm. And I do think it's a little bit of both. So you see these kiddos who just blossom, and it's like, where did this come from? Even under, you know, Title I in poverty, they just really stand out. Then you have other kids who have very involved parents and coach them through and do whatever they have to do to kind of get up to that level, which means they have to have some potential there. So it's a bit of both, because I will tell you, like my school district and different school districts I consult with, it's definitely different if a child's coming out of poverty. It's much harder to find these kids. They're there. Statistically, there should be just as many gifted kids there as there are up in the gated communities, but it's hard to find them and then nurture them in that kind of environment.
So once again, the marginalized community gets the blunt end of the stick and they're left behind.
Yeah.
In many cases.
Unfortunately, yes. You know, and if the teachers aren't trained to find that, and if they're not giving the tools, because even like the instruments we have to test a child, it's very different than a test that a child would typically take, like here's your little math test or things like that. So even if they're there, the tests can be a little bit biased. So, you know, if a child can't reason through and figure out, like, let me think of some here. Like I'm in Phoenix. Mm-hmm. How many kids know what it is like to rake leaves? Yeah, some, maybe not. A Title I kid living in poverty has probably never raked a leaf in their life. We don't have many big deciduous trees like that here. But a child who's been educated and read books with their parents and talk about all of these things could piece that together. So it's very, yeah, we need to identify them. We need to educate everyone about that. But even the tools that we have to use, which vary by state and sometimes by district, can be different and can be a little biased towards those who have been, you know,
yeah,
more worldly. If their parents read to them, that's huge.
From day one, right?
And that's part of the nurturing. It's absolutely, the giftedness is there, but that nurturing does make a huge difference.
Yeah, I spoke at a conference yesterday, at University of Houston, and it was all about early education, children's education, how to develop the mind of a child. And we're talking from 1 to 4. and that early education is so important because their brain, and you probably know more about this than I do, their brain literally develops almost all before the age of five. And it's just amazing how important those early years are in a child.
It is. And that's part of the reason why in my day job for my school district, we need a preschool. And I want to get these kids as early as we can and see what we can do preschool all the way up without, you know, finding these kids with the potential, not holding them back. If they're ready to move a grade level in math, they go and see what we can do.
Yeah. Teachers, what kind of questions do they have? What kind of needs do they have when you are in a conference teaching them and training them in your international speaking? What is some of their main concerns of, hey, wait, we want to help the kids too, because teachers' hearts are huge. What needs do they have or have that they're not getting met by school districts? And what kind of questions do they ask you about?
Oh, goodness. I would say a big piece that we haven't noticed until the pandemic, which has kind of highlighted it, is the mental health. And we have these children with this potential, but their brain is developing differently. And even adults don't all agree with what how we should support them or what we need to do with them. And it's really sad to see some of these kids and how they have to go through. And the teachers, basically, what I tell my gifted teachers is, you're a counselor. You know, these kids can soak up this information. They can learn and put ideas together. I mean, I have a minor in history and I had a fifth grader teaching me about the American Civil War. I don't know how many courses I had on that, but he loved it. And he went home and was searching and his parents bought him books. I'm like, yeah, that doesn't intimidate me as a teacher. Because, yeah, you're now finding that passion and find those things. And he loved bringing in stuff that I didn't know. But I think a lot of it is that teachers are right now transitioning from disseminators of knowledge to teaching kids how to think and work with that knowledge. Because let's face it, if a kid, they can just get on their cell phone and Google anything, you know, and acquire knowledge. But what do we do with it? That's harder. And that's what we've transitioned into. So if you match that with gifted kids who get things quickly, at least in some areas, not all, because you can have some kids in your class who are, you know, amazing writers and other ones who will not write. And writing's a big piece of gifted too. We can talk about that a bit. But it's all these other pieces outside of giving knowledge to the students. It's how do I engage them? How can I be more creative? How can I, when I, let's say we group all the gifted kids together, that's good, but still it's very diverse with what's going on and how they're working. So it's a lot of, I would say, coaching, getting the teachers used to all of the kids do not have to be doing the same thing at the same time. We can all learn different things. We're teaching you from where you're coming from and where you're at. So it's a lot of coaching when they hit those rough patches and they're having a bad day, because they do tend to be highly sensitive. Many of these gifted kiddos, that's what I call kind of the flip side. People think, ooh, gifted, my child's going to excel at school and do all that. No, you've got, yes, they're able to do that, but their brain is developing differently. They tend to be highly sensitive.
Is there a delicate balance between wanting to teach and train the children and work and focus on their IQ compared to their EQ? You know, there's always that big debate of, hey, wait, we need to focus on more of their emotional and how they deal with other people and how they communicate than we do their IQ. Is there a balance that sometimes is really difficult in the school systems of trying to figure out, because we're not only teachers, like you said, they're counselors, they're their friends, they're sometimes the only champion they have in their life. How hard is that to juggle those two different things?
It's really hard because, you know what, EQ is not tested.
Right.
So when it comes down to it, schools are judged on the testing. And I come from Arizona, which it's so all about the test. It literally. But And I tended to be more what I would say old school, way back. I'm here to teach. This is a knowledge. You need to learn it. Versus going into gifted, I'm the other way. Now, if these kids, I would say all kids, but gifted especially, if they come to school and they see meaning in what they're learning, they know you as an educator have their back and will teach them what they need to know and give them some flexibility to, you know, go off on a tangent and find these little pieces and things like that, they then will do well. It's when we sit back and focus on drill and kill and we're going to get ready for the state test, and they tune out, a lot of them, because they don't care. They see the big picture and the connections, and it's hoop jumping.
Yeah. You know? And I think Texas has been famous for, hey, you get to keep your job or promoted or whatever if your students, so many of them, pass those state tests and that type of thing. And it gets so stressful for the teachers that they drop out and go, hey, wait, it's all about a piece of paper. And instead of really working it in to where the kids actually can work that knowledge.
Absolutely. And it's not, I was just going to say, teachers need to be held accountable. I mean, like any profession, we need to be held accountable and things need to be done. Absolutely. But we're not building cars either. Every kid is coming in and they're a little different, and they can be different day to day based on what's happened.
You know, that's all right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fantastic. Hey, well, we're going to take our last break. 888-627-6008. We're getting some wonderful comments online, and my phone is still vibrating out the kazoo. 888-627-6008. On the other side of this break, Adam, I want to talk about the topic of your book, how trauma deals differently in a gifted child, and how should we recognize that and maybe reapproach it from a different angle than what we would normally. So we're going to talk about that on the other side of this break. Be right back.
HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers A Child Called It and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Thank you for everybody that's been supporting that Shattered by the Darkness. It hit number 7 over the weekend on Amazon, which to me is huge. And believe you me, Adam, I don't know if you do this or not, but I click that refresh button all the time and see how it's going on the charts and everything, just to see if people are still interested. And it's still selling like crazy. I'm up to buy about 620,000 copies of that. Wow. And my new book, When the Dark Clouds Come, that's just for teenagers and 20-year-olds, is going to be out in a few weeks. It's being packaged now and going to be coming through, and I'm looking forward to that. Now, when we talk about trauma, and we talk about that every week on the program, how should we package this and deal with children that are gifted? Because you're obviously an expert on this, in this area, because you wrote this book on it. How do we deal with them differently than what we would normally? How do they process it differently? And just tell me your scoop on that. Take as long as you need.
Yeah. I think it kind of comes down to, again, trying to understand what gifted really is and what people think it is. So we talked a bit about the asynchronous development. That's been proven. We, with all the technology with the brain and different things going on, we can start seeing more of what's going on in there. But what also tends to stand out with the gifted kids is their sensitivities. And again, not all, we all like to put, and I do this myself, put people into groups and say, we're all gifted as all this. Well, no, it predominantly, these are some things we see. But most gifted kids I've come across, and I've been around a lot now, are much more sensitive than the average kids. And we don't always see it or know it because they're not always good at communicating that. So,
give me an example.
So, and this kind of ties in. Let me tell you a story about one of my former fourth graders.
Okay.
So at the time I was teaching, it was a pullout program. So I would see kindergartners through sixth graders, you know, an hour here, 30 minutes there. I'm pulling all of these kids for all of these different things. And I had a fourth grader who came to school and I was out doing the parking lot duty. You know, I'm coming in and there's my student crying at my doorstep and just sobbing and sobbing. And I'm like, what's going on? I mean, she couldn't even talk. So I'm like, okay, let's get in. I had a little corner in my room with a beanbag in the library. And she went and sat there and just couldn't even talk about how upset she was. And I'm like, fine. So, you know, I call her teacher. She's here in my room. You know, don't mark her absent. I'll try to see what's going on. She was over there for a long time. I had other kids coming in. The teacher sent over a packet of work. I didn't even give it to her. She just something awful. Finally, after a couple groups of kids had come through and I sat down over there and I'm like, what happened? What's going on? She saw a dead bird on the way to school.
Wow.
I'm just like, what? And it's just highly sensitive to these things. And this is kind of an extreme reaction, but it's kind of the joke in gifted that there's a drama or a trauma every day, something's going on. But I had developed that rapport and that safe space for her and my kids. Thank goodness my district provided a full gifted person at each campus so I could be that person to help her. And I'm like, okay, just hang out here. You know, when you're ready, your teacher left some work, or you can read a book, do what you need to do. And it took her a while. She finally started going and she was off. And I called her mom at my lunch break. And I'm like, she's like, yep, she does that. You know, she can't anything with animals, she's highly sensitive to. But this poor girl, she was not ready to learn that day.
Yeah.
She was not ready. And I mean, what would you do in a classroom of 30 something kids and everybody's, you know, so we need to train teachers. We need to have advocates for these kiddos who, you know, these safe spaces. And we need to realize that they're very sensitive. And with everything going on now in the world, the pandemic, you know, Russia, are we going to war? The kids are hearing it. They're so caught up. And they may or may not be becoming very, you know, upset by it. And they may not feel comfortable communicating that. So that's something we as parents and teachers need to be open to and making sure that our children feel like they can talk to us. And the gifted in particular, they sit and spin on those kinds of things and start making all those connections. And it's really quite sad.
That's a good point. I never really thought about them having different ways of processing or dealing with trauma or extra sensitive in certain areas. How early should we focus on the gifted? For instance, I know we have my executive director of our In His Steps school, preschool, is watching tonight. Should we go down into the preschool noticing? Can you see it even in the early years? Or do we wait till second or third grade and they start popping up out of the woodwork? What's your wisdom on that, Adam? How early should we start putting on those binoculars and looking at the children?
I was going to say yes to both. I mean, some students we do catch on early. And like you said, kind of earlier, like a lot of parents, they all think their child's gifted. But some really do stand out like when you see the four-year-old who's reading and can come have a conversation with you about what she just read, there's something there. But I think for most, typically when we're in school, we start seeing more kids become identified just with the maturity and able to pass the official tests around second, third grade. That's kind of when more programs start to open. But definitely at a young age, that's why I said we're starting preschool and we're screening different kiddos with our tests to see how can they reason through and problem solve and, you know, be beyond what a typical, you know, fourth grader would be able to do. We're finding them. And we've only done two rounds of testing. Wow. Just for my one preschool program. We're finding them.
What about, because here I am in front of a piano. What happens if a child comes up to a piano and, you know, most of them just bang just to hear it, or they, you know, and they start doing something like, whoa, do you see it in the arts too? That it's like, wait, there's something. Do you notice that being instrument that is used to be able to detect giftedness in arts?
What I have seen, it's more the parents who find that out. Uh-huh. Again, if you look back at school funding and things, there's not a huge emphasis at arts, especially at the younger grades. I think if we had more opportunity for the kids to see and be exposed to that, we would probably find more. But the ones I have come across, it's the parents. For some reason, the kid's very musically inclined. And so the parents have been able to, you know, get a keyboard or different things like that to help them. Mm-hmm. We've been basically focusing on the academics.
Right. But
what's interesting is a child can be very much gifted in the arts, but not be gifted academically. Remember, there are lots of different things, you know, that they could be gifted in or have a deficiency in.
Wow. Now, you noticed, you mentioned that you were a specific gifted teacher representative in a school. In a just a ballpark figure, what kind of percentages in our country do they have the funds or the resources to have a gifted resource person or teacher in the districts? Do you have any idea what kind of percentage the schools have?
I would guess low. Well below 50, just from the different conferences and people that I have talked to, it's hit and miss. Even in, you know, my state, it's there's not a lot of funding, but there's a lot of freedom for the school districts and charter schools and things to do things. If they make it a priority, if they choose to do that, yes. Other districts and even states I've heard from don't put a big emphasis on it. And I think it's that kind of awareness of what really is gifted. It's not, oh, those kids are just brighter, they'll be fine. We still see a lot of that. Or, oh, and I honestly don't hear a lot of it now, but the old adage of, oh, you know, the kid can go tutor. Well, if the kid is gifted at math and things just come to them, to go sit down with the child that is struggling and doesn't understand it is not going to bode well for either of them.
Right. Right. Now, I only have 30 seconds. They're getting ready to cut us off. If a parent is listening tonight, how should they approach the teacher, the school system, if they feel that their child has this giftedness in them? What's the best approach in a real quick nutshell?
Absolutely approach it as a team. And this is what I would tell the teachers as well. Go in it. As a parent, this is what I'm seeing at home. This is what my child is talking about doing. You know, have you seen this at school? How can we help? What more can I do as a parent to make sure that they're being challenged or they're having interest in whatever's going on at school, and start that dialogue and really work with the teacher? Because the teacher may or may not be aware of giftedness, but I think odds are the teacher does care about children and will work with you if you approach it in a how can I help kind of way. Right. You know, we see so much now with the, you know, negativity in society and things. Approach it as a team. What can I do to help at home? This is what I'm seeing.
Good wisdom. Tell you what, Adam, great, great program. A lot of great information. If somebody wants to get in touch with you directly, what's the best way? Is it through the website?
The website. Brightchildbooks.com. And then my email is adam@brightchildbooks.com.
That's easy enough. Adam, thank you so much. I think I have a friend in Phoenix, and I appreciate you and all the work that you're doing. And thanks for sharing tonight. And I recommend highly everybody to get this book called Gifted Children and How Trauma Impacts Them. It's a short read, but it's a good read. And I appreciate you spending some time with us tonight on Breaking the Silence. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Appreciate it, Adam. As we do every week, I'm going to close the program in the same way, because it's so important. No matter what's going on in your life, no matter what's happened to you in your life, no matter what you're going to face tomorrow, there's always hope. There's always hope. Thanks for joining us tonight. Join us next week for another edition, live from Houston, Texas, of Breaking the Silence. God bless and have an awesome week. We'll see you later.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.